Hi. Today, Hillary Clinton on why Europe must curb immigration to stop right-wing populists. But first, the global diseases that have been ignored by Big Pharma. There are some diseases in the world that not many people think about.
A neglected disease is a disease of people who haven't really got the money to be a market for drugs. That's really how it gets defined.
More than 4 billion people in the world live on less than the equivalent of $5 a day.
Really, you could say it's a disease of neglected people who can't afford to buy drugs themselves. So pharmaceutical companies will tell you it costs around $2.5 billion to develop a new drug, which is much disputed.
Around four decades ago, the pharmaceutical industry turned its back on new medicines for existing infections and diseases which kill.
But you're not going to get that sort of money for any drug for sleeping sickness, or Chagas, or leishmaniasis, or any of those other diseases that get called neglected diseases.
It's an imperative that we change the way we think about drug development and health research, that it actually benefits everybody's health and not just the health of the richest.
From The Guardian, I'm India Rakesin. Today in Focus, when big pharmaceutical companies walk away, how do you fight the outbreak of fatal infections? We start our journey in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where a disease known as sleeping sickness has killed thousands, and it has been ignored.
To get to Bandundu, it's an hour's flight from Kinshasa. To the east. If you think of DRC as the size of Western Europe, then getting to Bandundu is just a hop.
Sarah Bosley is the health editor at The Guardian.
This was the attraction of the story for me. People think of the Congo as a disastrous place, a place of violence and war, with Ebola taking off. We don't hear about anything good, anything positive.
She travelled to the Democratic Republic of the Congo in Central Africa to meet this man.
This is Dr. Victor Kande, and he is a magnificent man. He's really quite revered by all those people I met who were actually working with sleeping sickness.
Sarah met Dr. Kande in a hospital in the town of Mushi in the Bandundu region.
They refer to him as the father of sleeping sickness, sometimes as the godfather of sleeping sickness. He was the first director ever of the National Sleeping Sickness Programme in DRC.
What is sleeping sickness?
Sleeping sickness is a parasitical disease. So it's passed from one human being to another by the bite of the tsetse fly. The parasite enters the bloodstream, and the first stage is really unremarkable. It's headaches and fevers, those sorts of things. It could be absolutely anything. And then actually it might even go away, and not only go away, but disappear completely for perhaps 2 or 3 years. And then suddenly, this person can become aggressive. He might start to shout, just act out of character completely. And so people think it's a sort of form of insanity that's set in. And then after that, they start to sleep a lot, an awful lot. And then gradually, from sleeping, they slip into a coma, and then invariably, without treatment, they die.
At the beginning of the century in the DRC, there were around 30,000 cases of people with sleeping sickness. Dr. Kande now runs a government programme that tests for the disease. Teams of screeners head out into often very remote areas with a mobile screening unit, sometimes packed up onto the back of a motorbike.
There are a lot of villages that are not actually mapped at the moment, and the effort of screening people has led to finding 10,000 villages that nobody knew was there.
10,000?
Yeah. And some of these villages actually move to escape from sleeping sickness. So if a number of people were ill and were dying, they would up and take the village somewhere else in order to get away from it.
What sort of people did you meet, Sarah, who were living with sleeping sickness, dealing with it?
I met a man called Alfred, who is living with his mother. He was a fisherman. I mean, he is a fisherman by trade. And first, really, that anybody much knew about it was when he was becoming very aggressive and shouting a lot. He was beating up his mother, who was in the house. I met his mother, who said, I ran away from him because he was hitting me. And they diagnosed sleeping sickness, and they gave him treatment in a trial of the new drug. But unfortunately, while he was there, his wife left him with one of their children. His arm and leg on one side were paralysed during the disease. So he can't work, and that means he's not bringing in money, and his wife and child will not come back until he can actually provide for them.
Sleeping sickness has been destroying lives and killing people in the DRC and surrounding countries for centuries, with little hope for survival. But there was a point where the disease got a lot of attention.
DRC was colonised by the Belgians. I think every effort was made to develop drugs for sleeping sickness while the colonial regimes were in existence. I think the colonial activities in cutting down trees, in moving people about, particularly moving populations of people from one place to another, actually, the tsetse fly breeding grounds changed and the flies spread and the disease spread. So there was a time where I think there was one outbreak, there was about 800,000 people. And in fact, that set on the scientists of the day actually to investigate and try to do something about it. They needed the drugs for the people they were ruling and for themselves as well. So these were the colonial scientists and a few institutes of tropical medicine.
And what came of that? Was there ever a cure?
Until relatively recently, the only drug they had for that was milarsaprol, which is an arsenic derivative.
Arsenic.
Okay.
So a well-known poison.
Indeed. And it would kill 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 of all the people who took it, which meant that doctors were put in a really bad situation where they were giving treatment to patients that they knew would kill some of them.
So for 50 years, nothing else was developed, even though they had a medicine that was killing between 5 and 10% of patients?
Yes, that's right. These were neglected people with a neglected disease.
The country was known as the Belgian Congo from when it was colonised in 1908 until 1960, when it gained its independence, eventually becoming the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Civil war quite quickly broke out, and when that happened, European interest in the development of drugs for sleeping sickness went almost completely on the back burner. Fast forward over 40 years to the early 2000s, and sleeping sickness is still killing people in the DRC. Dr. Kande has become the first director of the country's national sleeping sickness programme.
Pour le soigner. Alors nous avons, je posais la question à cette époque, au niveau de l'OMS, pour dire mais nous n'avons pas de médicaments.
He's lobbied hard for help from scientists and the World Health Organization. Although some scientists were looking at the problem, it was hard to get the interest and the money for a new drug to be developed. But what about drugs that existed for another purpose?
A repurposed drug is essentially when you have a drug that had been developed for a certain disease, a certain indication, when you take that same drug, but then explore whether it might also work against something totally different.
In 2005, an NGO called the Drugs for Neglected Diseases Initiative, or DNDI, were on the case. Els Torella is one of the founding members of the organisation, and she was leading the work on sleeping sickness.
We started out, there was this one family, which is called nitroimidazoles. It's a very broad family of compounds that we knew had potential as drug candidates.
They needed something safe and effective, so they were given access to mine an oasis of developed but unused chemical compounds that had been just sitting in the archives of pharmaceutical companies, some of them for decades.
When a drug is not new, because it's already been used for another disease, you cannot patent the chemical substance that underlies the drug. And so companies are not interested in repurposing because they cannot get the monopolies based on which they have developed their financial model.
Els and her team hoped that something in all this data, currently useless to companies, could prove life-saving for patients in the DRC.
We set out in a very, very systematic scientific literature.
They searched and searched and they searched.
Digging out examples of where
it's mostly online,
you have a number of...
It is searching for a needle in a haystack.
You know, but scientific names that I cannot even pronounce.
And eventually they found a fierce contender, fexinidazole, or Fexi for short.
There was this moment that we said, like, yes, we have something here, because we were always afraid to find out that a drug was discontinued because it was toxic, for instance, while these data showed that, no, there was no reason. They just abandoned the compound and we never knew exactly why, but certainly not because it was not medically promising.
It was initially developed for parasitical infections in the 1970s by German company Hirsch, who are now part of Sanofi. But it was never used, and certainly never identified as a potential cure for one of DRC's biggest killers, which, according to successful trials in the country, it now is. The European Medicines Agency have just officially approved this drug for use, and Sanofi helped with the trial. So why didn't they find a use for it before?
Well, we would never know the exact answer to that, but what we understood is that because that compound had been in early preclinical development, late 70s, early 80s, if I remember well, and that was at the time that many companies kind of dropped their infectious diseases programs.
Why? Why did they stop? Why did they close down their infectious disease research?
Well, because, I mean, at those moments, it was felt that infectious diseases were much less profitable than the newly emerging chronic disease areas, where you had blockbuster drugs that were much more profitable than any infectious disease drug.
With an infectious disease, you treat it, cure it, and people don't need the drug anymore. Chronic diseases like cancers or cardiovascular problems or obesity, by their nature, you take the drug for a long time, perhaps for the rest of your life. So as a company, you can make more money. And in the late 70s, people thought the medical industry was on top of infectious diseases.
Antibiotics really put an end to many infectious diseases in the rich countries. Certainly in the 70s and the 80s, they were hailing the end of infectious diseases. They really were. They were quite triumphalist about it. Right. They were saying, infectious diseases are beaten. This is it. It's all over.
Wow.
That was before AIDS.
Okay. Right.
They were mistaken. They were quite badly mistaken. And since then, we've had antibiotic resistance, which means that the antibiotics don't work as well as they should do.
Infections may have been dwindling in one part of the world, but they were as present as ever in poorer countries.
Of course, I mean, it's very clear. This is not even a matter of debate. I think 20 years ago, when we started the NDI, we needed to make the case that pharmaceutical companies had withdrawn from these areas because they were pursuing profit. Today, the pharmaceutical companies acknowledge that themselves, that yes, those areas are not of commercial interest to them. So unless there are major incentives, meaning in general, all kinds of public subsidies, push and pull mechanisms, they are not going to engage. I mean, they say that themselves.
Sleeping sickness isn't the only disease that could be cured in this way. Neglected diseases account for 11% of the global disease burden. So why aren't pharmaceutical companies, the gatekeepers of medicine, doing more to develop drugs that are really needed?
Well, I think there is a very powerful narrative that the pharmaceutical companies are also propagating, that they are actually there to ensure that we have the drugs that we need. The reality, of course, is very different. Roughly 2/3 of all the new drugs that are being developed by the pharmaceutical companies have no add a therapeutic value. We don't actually need them, but with a lot of marketing, they are being sold to us and we buy them and we pay high prices for them. And that's what makes the pharmaceutical industry run. It's not the medical breakthroughs, which are quite rare, actually.
And in the meantime, you have pretty urgent, fatal infectious diseases
that do not get any attention. Exactly. But again, we have now established with models like the NDI that it is totally possible to have a parallel system where you develop new drugs according to the public interest, where you deliver effective and safe new treatments that are affordable and accessible.
What's happening in the DRC is saving thousands of lives, and quickly. We know that at the turn of the century in the country, there were around 30,000 cases of sleeping sickness. And now? Last year, there were 1,100 cases. And in the first half of this year, only 350 were recorded. The progress in the DRC is amazing, but this is a global issue.
Well, we always talk about neglected communities with a sense that these are like a few people here or there. But neglected populations, they are the majority.
Finding a way to rescue drugs that are not worth a penny to businesses, but which save lives, has prompted big pharmaceutical companies to help organisations like DNDI with their work. But as Els Torrele says, it's not just the health industry that can make changes.
If we are all convinced of that and we press that upon our friends, our family, our policymakers, that the markets are not going to solve the poverty nor the lack of health equity, I think then we are getting a long way, because that is what policymakers need to hear, that they need to prioritize health over business. And that is a responsibility that we can all share, I think.
Els, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You can read more from Sarah Bosley's trip to the DRC on our website, where you can also find a film of her time with Dr. Kande by Millie Harvey and photographs by David Levine. Head to theguardian.com. Next up, in opinion, Hillary Clinton tells us how mass migration in Europe may be pushing voters to political extremes. Welcome back. Hillary Clinton has been talking to The Guardian about mass migration, and she argues that for Europe to ward off right-wing populism, a welcoming approach to newcomers will no longer work.
I think that Europe needs to get a handle on migration because that's what lit the flame. And I admire the very generous and compassionate approaches that were taken, particularly by leaders like Angela Merkel. But I think it's fair to say Europe has done its part, and to send a very clear message, we are not going to be able to continue to provide refuge and support. Because if you don't deal with the migration issue, it will continue to roil the body politic. And there's no doubt in my mind that Brexit was largely about immigration and the lies that were told by the Leave campaign. But immigration really helped to push it over the line. I think there is a difference between what's happening in the United States and what's happening in Europe, although there are really important similarities. And there does seem to have been a reaction in Europe to mass migration that has set off a lot of the political consequences, including electing leaders who have a tolerance for really closing off the political space against the press, against civic action, against political opponents. So the original impetus may have come from the negative populist rejection of open borders and the flood of migrants who've come from the Middle East and North Africa, but it has morphed into something more than that. In the United States, the migration crisis, if you will, is much less real, but still exploited by the current administration. Instead of the millions who flooded into Europe, we have tens of thousands. It appears as though there is a reaction against leadership, expertise, experience, and it's hard at this point to know whether that's just a passing phenomenon or whether there's a turning point that has so pushed people's negativity toward democratic norms and institutions that we're on a more permanent path.
That was Hillary Clinton talking to The Guardian's Patrick Winter as part of our new populism series. You can read it all at theguardian.com. That's it for today and for this week. Do let us know how you're feeling about Today in Focus, share your thoughts, and if you fancy it, have a subscribe. My thanks to Sarah Bosley, Els Terela, and Hillary Clinton and Patrick Winter. The producers today were Mythili Rao and David Waters. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier, and the executives are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll see you Monday.